Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Chris Hutton. Let's get into the first news story of today. And Chris, and you and I were talking in the pre-show discussion about, this is a point you made, about how South Africans, you know, we often focus on the big things in the news. When it comes to like policy analysis, that kind of stuff, people like us are always talking about, we're talking about expropriation without compensation. We're talking about national health insurance. We're talking about this political poll and that political poll. And that's all correct. Those are all important issues. But the number one issue for millions of South Africans after unemployment is crime. This affects South Africans of every race, of every class, of every socioeconomic position, of every geographic location. It is the overwhelming sense that crime is kind of out of control. Now, to be fair, there are differences between provinces and locations, but generally speaking, there isn't a South African alive who doesn't feel the very real impact of crime. We've recently had governance, public safety, and justice survey conducted by Stats SA, the latest one. I believe they put out one every single year. And this one just does a survey of households to ask what their experience of crime has been and what their thoughts on crime are. The survey has found that house breakings remain the most common household crime, but also that about only 43% of these incidents are reported to the cops. This is one of the reasons why there's so much focus on the murder rate when talking about crime rates, because murders are the most likely to be recorded of any crime, whereas everything else from house breakings to assaults to rapes often can go unreported, particularly when there's low trust in the cops, as there is in South Africa. The survey has found that for yet another year in a row, South Africans are feeling less safe than they were previously. South Africans felt most safe in 2020-2021 recently. That's presumably because of the lockdown. There was less traffic and movement on the streets, people were inside more. And so there was, I think, probably then we did see a reduction in crime during that period. But since then, the survey has found that perceptions of crime have gone way up. Significant numbers of people feel very unsafe walking alone at night in their own neighborhoods. Limpopo was the province where people felt the safest, whereas the Western Cape had the highest proportion of people who felt unsafe. Mpumalanga had only 7% of people recorded as saying they felt unsafe walking alone at night. Household burglary was apparently experienced by about 13.2% of households, which is up from 10.9% back in 2020. Those are pretty big numbers, you know, 1 in 10 people every single year basically having their household experience some kind of break-in. And Chris, this is the sort of ongoing detriment to South Africa's, I think, quality of living, also to our opportunities for economic growth. Every rand you spend on putting up a fence, hiring a private security company, even, you know, I'm sure you've seen those very poor houses where people try to put up a fence by like breaking bottles and sticking them in concrete on the top of their wall to make like a palisade fence with spikes. Every rand spent on that is a rand that is not being spent on making the economy more productive, on buying things that people need to live. It's a net loss to our whole society.
I always link or try and link any new data in the sort of crime policing space to President Ramaphosa's visit to the White House earlier this year, where people such as President Ramaphosa and those in his delegation, you know, the roundabout way, they were like, no, there's no white genocide in South Africa. It's not just that crime affects only Afrikaans, white South Africans. We've got high crime rates that affect everyone year after year. We break records because that's just, it affects everyone across the board. So if you just think about even from our top governance structures, that kind of mentality and thinking like this is the kind of message you put forward in the center of global politics, in one of the centers of global finance and investment, potential investment in South Africa. And if you put forward that narrative, what does that do in terms of South Africa's image, which has already been weakened and become less attractive over time? So I think it's important for us to reinforce just the debilitating effect of crime on a day-to-day basis. Many companies, many citizens, many communities try and find ways to deal with it when they can't rely on the police. Not to say that there aren't still, I think, very good constables, other people at various police stations across the board trying to do their daily work, but they don't get the support from national SAPs, the resources. A lot of the funding or a lot of the resources goes towards the top brass and not to capacitating and building police stations who have to then do that work in their communities. So it's a little surprise that over time we've had the steady increase of crime, of sort of violent society, and it's exacerbated by the low growth situation. So I think, yeah, the solutions to crime are many, and you probably can't say like one is more important than the other to our high crime rate, but it does reinforce, I think, just how very real the issue has become. It's more of a case, as you rightly pointed out, of just whatever money you, if you're fortunate enough to have a job, whatever income you get, to spend it on just surviving versus on long-term spending, planning, your kids' education, any of that kind of stuff. You just use what you can to protect yourself and your family as much as possible.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem of crime is linked to sort of socioeconomic stuff like poverty and such, but it's not the only, it's not even, you know, it's not the only part of that story. There are countries in the world that have higher murder rates than us that are poorer, and ones that are richer. We consistently rank in the top 10 in terms of countries' recorded murder rates. I think we've hovered between 9 and 3rd in the world. Now, some countries, you know, you might question their stats, so maybe it's not entirely fair. Also, this is intentional homicides. It doesn't necessarily include things like you know, like war zones, like you might find in Eastern DRC or something like that. But that's sort of beside the point, is that, you know, what you really need is good policing. You need things that can take on gangs. As we know, a significant number of our murders in this country are from gangs, are drug-related. We know that Naope, in particular, is a very big problem across large portions of South Africa. And until you get the sort of institutions right to crack down on this stuff, you're going to continue to bleed away the potential of your society. And of course, this hurts so many industries. It hurts tourism, hurts people's opportunities to earn money doing things like that. And instead, it's just wasted on having to protect ourselves. All right, let's move on to our next story. And this one, kind of actually incredibly outrageous. So the Matlanga Commission, which was set up by President Cyril Ramaphosa to investigate these accusations made by Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi, the KZN Police Commissioner, about the police minister Senzo Mchunu and alleged connections to criminal networks, was supposed to produce a report within 3 months. It was supposed to start on the 1st of September, and it's supposed to produce a second report after 6 months, because these are, of course, very serious allegations that really go to the heart of exactly what we're just talking about. You know, if it turns out that senior people in the police ministry are connected to criminal organizations, of course you're not going to fix crime problems. This is a huge crisis. Well, no one told anyone at the Justice Department that this was a huge crisis that needed urgent attention, because according to Judge Mkhwanazi, the commission will not begin its work on the 1st of September as planned. Unfortunately, he said that the Justice Department had not completed its process of procuring the commission's infrastructure requirements to commence its hearing. Quote, unfortunately, those commitments have not been met. As a result, it has since become clear that the commission will not be able to start the hearings as scheduled. But for the lack of requirements that the department has failed to produce, the commission would otherwise have been ready to commence its hearings on September 1st. Regrettably, the commission is now left with no choice but to reschedule the starting date. Mkhwanazi has not given a date for when the thing would actually begin. He said the commission considers it best to fix a new date for the commencement of its hearings once everything that needs to be procured by the department is in place. It also wishes to assure South Africans that it is doing everything within its power to ensure that the first witness will take the stand as soon as possible after everything has been procured by the department. Chris, this is either a really lame attempt to delay the thing and prevent it actually ever going ahead, or it is an incredibly embarrassing example of just pathetic incompetence. What are your thoughts?
So the best way, and I'm not saying best as in moral, but just plausible way that I could try and justify this or steel man this, is to say, look, government departments need to go through quite complicated procurement processes, and you need to make sure that the right people get the tenders and get to procure the equipment and the infrastructure that is needed, right? So you need to make sure that they all get their paperwork in order before you go about, I don't know, wherever you go and shop and et cetera, where you go and where the vendors display their wares.
They're not building a hospital. I mean, what do you need? Cameras, a microphone, a building? Like, hey, you could probably get those for free if you asked around.
The cost of, given South Africa's procurement, public procurement setup legislation, the cost of anything can be driven high enough if you know where to go and where to and how to put it out to tender. So I think you underestimate the tenderpreneur in South Africa's bureaucratic system. Just a maybe second point to add is, contrast this with the national dialogue and how that has been derided across the board by South Africans, whereas there was much more interest, I think, and hope in this particular commission of inquiry. Not that if there's a commission and there are findings that the state would act on it, but just that it comes in again into the sort of criminal corruption, the connections between criminal enterprises and the state, and especially with the ANC on the back of Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi's allegations.
Right. It's a very important step. You actually have to investigate these things, and the public needs to be able to see what's going on and hear the witness testimony. Yeah. So this whole, you know, it was important that we hold this commission. Even if government decides to just ignore it like it did with the Zondo Commission, it's still going to be important for the public to know what's going on. And, you know, if this goes on much longer, if they don't start within a week or something, there should be serious repercussions in terms of maybe even something like protests, because this is just completely pathetic and unacceptable. And, you know, when people in government and the ANC ask, oh, where did things go wrong? Why is everything turning against us? You know, this is a great example. If you can't do the basics of procurement for one of the most important things going on in the country right now, then, you know, is it any surprise that things are falling apart?
Just to add on repercussions, as we're recording, I had a check, and the latest is that the Minister of Justice, Minister Kubai, has suspended the department's Director General over delays in setting up the Commission of Inquiry. So there's something ostensibly.
That's a start.
Yeah. Just have it on the record. So we do our research.
No, that's good. That happened since I checked the news. But that's a start, but that's clearly not good enough. Like, how hard can it be? Honestly, I really wonder whether the judge could simply get the resources himself, embarrass the government, and just go ahead and start doing the proceedings and say, well, you guys provide me the venue when you're ready, and in the meantime, we'll actually start doing the investigations. I think that would be a very good move. But, you know.
Hosted at a minister's house, of which they have many.
Indeed. All right. For our last story, Chris, this is something you've spoken about recently publicly. The Transport Minister, Barbara Creasy, has announced that Transnet has chosen 11 new third-party operators to run trains on 41 routes on Transnet's lines. Now, there's an editorial in Business Live which welcomes this, but also sounds a note of caution about the infrastructure. With this kind of public-private partnership, is it good? Is it bad? Well, you know, we're sort of free market people. We tend to kind of lean towards, yes, the private sector should do more stuff, but the devil's in the details. If you sign some terrible thing that's just going to either, you know, make these companies go bankrupt, or it's a corrupt deal where just sort of caterers are being given inflated prices to run stuff, then it's not good enough. Unfortunately, we don't really know, because So far, there has just been a media release on this public-private partnership to run the trains on Transnet. And while it's, you know, having more competition in the Transnet network, having the public-private sector involved, all sound like they're good things, until we see the details, we can't really judge this one. And there are no details available. What do you make of this, Chris?
Yeah, I take all those points. I think we want ideally more privatization. You want competition in not only state with state-owned companies, but within state-dominated sectors. So things like electricity, logistics, et cetera, et cetera. Two things to keep in mind here. So the terms of the possible deals. So we only look at this vague language of between 1 to 10 years. With this kind of infrastructure investment and this kind of, these kinds of concessions, you should be looking at 25 years or longer. I mean, for you to, as a private operator, come in and invest in infrastructure to get a return on your capital outlay, you want longer terms. And then number two, the question around infrastructure and who's going to be responsible for it. So at the moment, and I'm hoping to be corrected here to get more details from the Department of Transport, from other entities, from the minister, from Transnet themselves, from Transnet Rail, from Transnet Ports, whoever would be willing to put out more information about it. But at the moment, you as a private, one of the 11 private operators, you have to invest in and operate on the infrastructure foot to it, which is to say as is. So, I mean, we know generally the decrepit state of Transnet's infrastructure, rail infrastructure. You come in and is the risk then and the responsibility on you as the private operator, or is it going to be on Transnet or the state to underwrite or in some way protect your investment, as it were? So, I mean, it's a good sign that there are at least 25 bidders and that 11 have been approved nominally. Like, this is a different... This is a new era for rail in South Africa, where it's just been one company. So nominally, it's a good sign. But who's getting these deals? What is the state of infrastructure? Who bears the risk? And then if it's not done properly, again, in time, the state and other actors, especially in labor, they can say, look, we tried this privatization thing, but you see the private guys, they exploited us, and we shouldn't really try this kind of thing. So don't worry about it. Let's rather, you know, continue putting money into Transnet.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'd also like to know kind of all the players involved here as well, so we can see whether there's any improper connections, that sort of thing. Because as you say, this is just kind of being half done so that the idea of privatization can be quashed entirely, then it is something that we should not embrace. But if it is a genuine attempt, then it's important that the details be published so we can actually understand what's going on here as the public. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. We thank you very much for listening. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. Have a good day.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.